Australia spends over $1 billion annually putting children in lockup. That's according to the Productivity Commission report on government services, which found youth detention-based supervision cost $1.1 billion in 2024 to 2025, with a national average of $1.3 million per child. But Indigenous experts are pushing for change, convening at the Stronger, Smarter Together Summit in Brisbane, which calls to reimagine Australia's sovereignty. The Wire's Sam Giorgio spoke with CEO of Stronger, Smarter Institute, Dr. Chris Sara, who says Australians need to decide if we'd rather spend billions on youth detention or invest in support systems where children can thrive.
The Stronger, Smarter Institute this year is 21 years old. It's been a tremendous journey. And we want to take this time to celebrate being 21 and to honour and say thank you to all of those school leaders, community leaders and teachers who have been part of the leadership programs that we've been running over that time. And it's really nice to be this far down the track and to be able to say hand on heart that we've injected hundreds and hundreds of school teachers and school principals and community leaders into classrooms, schools and communities who are committed to a high expectations relationship with the children that they serve.
How does remote secondary education sever young Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people from family, country and culture? And what are the knock-on effects of that severance?
Australian education system is a good system, but there's a piece missing. When we contemplate the challenges of providing secondary school education, quality secondary school education to First Nations children in remote communities, we as a country are left found wanting. And we need to do better than that because there is a tremendous amount of untapped potential that's been left to starve at the end of a vine because of our neglect, our systemic neglect. Generally speaking, for every 100 First Nations secondary school age child in a remote community, maybe 30 might get the chance to go off to boarding school because that's kind of like the only strategy that's seriously on offer. So we're leaving 70 on the runway saying, well, where's my choice? Where's my shot at opportunity? But even worse is of that 30 that's been sent away from their community and their family, maybe 25 are going to come back before they should. And so we're investing hundreds of millions of dollars in a strategy that's working for less than 5% of children. And those children were probably going to make it anyway because they've got that resilience and social scaffolding around them to enable success. So we're seeing too many children of secondary school age neglected by our education system because this piece is missing. And we just need to do better than that. And the way technology is at the moment, I believe that we can deliver a high quality education that's going to ensure that children remain connected to their country, to their culture, to their families, and at the same time deliver an education that's going to enable them to handle themselves and assert themselves with confidence in a modern world. When we take children away from their country, their culture, their family and community, we undermine their sense of resilience and their sense of culture and identity. And when those things are undermined, we create a circumstance where their sense of resilience is diminished. And we just have to do better than that as a country. And we need to fix and plug those gaps in our education system.
In what way should culture and connection to country be further considered in First Nations education? And what would be the benefit of that?
When any non-Indigenous Australian child goes to school, without even realising it, they are in a circumstance where their own sense of culture is palpable. It's all around them to the extent that they don't even realise that it exists. It's like a fish that swims in water, doesn't even know that water exists. But when a First Nations child comes to school, the environment is quite different. And so we have to create a circumstance where First Nations children in schools can see and feel themselves as part of the school in a way that's honourable and celebrated and makes them feel confident about who they are and who they can be in the world. And any teacher knows that to make a difference in a child's life, we have to be able to say, hey, I see you, I believe in you. And I think all of these parts, these differences that you bring to the classroom, into our school, they are magnificent. This is how we make kids feel good, and this is how we make them connected to the teacher and want to learn and even hungrier to learn more. So it's very important that First Nations kids, and in fact, any children who come with a difference shouldn't feel like they need to leave their sense of cultural identity at the school gate and then pick it up on the way home. Every child has the right to be in a school where their differences are recognised and celebrated.
The Productivity Commission report on government services found that the Australian government has spent $1.1 billion on youth detention last year. What's the significance of this figure?
I think that figure creates a circumstance, if we're honest, where we have to have a good look at ourselves as a country and say, who are we? And are we the country that we profess to be? And on that question, we can be found wanting. If we're prepared to spend more than $1 billion on locking up children who are coming from complex lives and circumstances, and we rant and rave about spending an extra $75,000 on a support worker to provide wraparound support for families, and we jump up and huff and puff and say, well, why should they be getting that when other families don't get that? That exposes questions about who we are and who we profess to be. And as a country, I just think that we can be better than that if we're honest with ourselves and we invest more wisely in the circumstances that enable children to thrive rather than investing in circumstance to lock them up when they get too complex for us.
How can the $1.1 billion spent on youth detention be better distributed to actually target driving factors of crime?
There's room for us as government to contemplate spending the public dollar differently, and that is on the things that matter further up the chain in terms of wraparound support services and the things that are going to enable families and children to thrive. It's very costly to keep a child in detention. It's cheaper to invest in wraparound services that enable that child to thrive in and amongst their own siblings and families. So if we can focus on spending dollars on the relationship and enabling children to thrive, then we'll be much better off. We estimate at the Institute that with a $7 million investment, as opposed to spending $1 billion on locking children up, with $7 million, we could continue to run and deliver the leadership programs in complex schools and enable school leadership, community leadership, and teachers to work in an authentic, high expectations relationship partnership in which we can all be committed to keeping children in schools and keeping them connected to our schools and communities rather than letting them slip away and be squeezed out of schools and finding themselves on that slippery slope towards a very costly youth justice pathway.
It's also mentioned that under your leadership, the Cherbourg State School attendance rose from 62% to 94%. What were some of the changes you implemented to reach that number? And has it informed more training of leaders for other schools and the Stronger Smarter Virtual Secondary College?
It's true that attendance went from around 60% to 94% because we focused on the things that really mattered. And we didn't cut welfare payments because we were honest with ourselves and thought, you know what, if we were running a restaurant and people didn't turn up to our restaurant, then we wouldn't be going around cracking them around the head with threats to cut their welfare payments to force them to come to our restaurant. We'd be looking at our decor and our menu and all of those things and saying, gee, our restaurant's pretty shitty. No wonder people don't want to turn up. And so we had to be honest and look at ourselves and think, well, why don't kids want to turn up? Because after all, we're the ones being paid to deliver education. So if they don't like what we're doing, then what are the things that we need to change? And so we just set about changing those things by focusing on the things that mattered, by making the learning more relevant to them, by engaging with parents to explain we're trying to get kids to be strong and smart so that they can survive in high school, have positive relationships. And that's how we got attendance to go to 94%, because community liked this. They liked that sense of being their children being strong and being smart. They recognized that we weren't there to just feel sorry for children. We were there to get them on a path to pursue excellence in whatever that meant for every individual. And over the last 21 years, we've been able to package up what we've learned from the Cherbourg School journey and spread that around the country, not in a sense that we said to people, this is what we did at Cherbourg, so this is what you should do. We articulated at a philosophical level the key components that enabled us to deliver success and enabled our children to thrive. And That's what we call the stronger, smarter philosophy. It's, you know, it's about nurturing a positive sense of cultural identity. It's about embracing positive community leadership, and it's about committing to high expectations relationships. And I'm really pleased to say that we've been able to spread that right across the country. There have been almost 6,000 school community leaders who've been through the program, and teachers who've come through our program. So it's nice to be able to say to you, hand on heart, that we've injected hundreds and hundreds of school teachers into classrooms across Australia, where they're prepared to walk in and say to their children, hey, I see you and I believe in you. And all of us, all of your listeners will know and remember a teacher and whether or not they made them feel good. And we've delivered hundreds of teachers who engage children in that way.
CEO of Stronger Smarter Institute, Dr. Chris Sara, speaking with The Wire's Sam Giorgio.